The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
We are, Michelle and myself, working on a deal, and we are not accepting this blame game which started in London.
We are not dealing with people acting in good faith. Yes, that means you, Mr. Barnier. You're not looking for solutions, you're looking to put obstacles in our way.
What is making people a bit fed up in the last 3 years is that the politicians, us, Parliament, has so far failed to implement the people's will.
Boris Johnson there, talking really about, in the language of blame in many respects, also with Nigel Farage there of the Brexit Party. The psychology and power plays of Brexit changed quite a lot during the week. Early on, it looked like many were positioning themselves to take the least amount of blame for things falling apart. Now, possibly, it looks as if the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson will end up maybe trying to pull people in behind him to sell them a possible deal that might not be hugely palatable for some. To talk about the psychology of blame, I'm joined by organisational psychologist Louise Carroll. Louise, you're very welcome to the programme. Why do we blame?
Well, blame is a process, it's a function. There's always a function behind blame. And generally for people, blame is a discharge of discomfort or pain. It's a way to get that out of the body. And that's for a variety of different reasons. And it can be personal or it could be to do with the work. But generally it comes down to a sense of feeling like you might be revealed or something that you might end up vulnerable, and so you push the blame onto somebody else to distract the attention away.
That feeling of being revealed or vulnerable, mm-hmm. if you're a politician, mm-hmm. would manifest itself at the next election because
exactly, yeah.
there's a very direct motive. What about in the corporate world and within an office setting or a management setting? Mm-hmm. How does blame work there?
Similarly, in a sense, and people can ask, is it to do with being insecure, or is it to do with something beyond, I suppose, what it looks to be on the surface, but it generally can be. I mean, it could be insecurity, it could be a way to self-protect, to inflate the ego if somebody feels threatened, which can actually turn into anger, or even it can be quite rageful, the sense of being threatened, the sense of needing to protect your space or what you've done.
Now, that need to protect yourself in a work environment, and again, to go back to the political analogy, politics is a ruthless business. You're in, you're out the next election. If in a company or an employment situation, people don't have a level of security, in other words, when a mistake is made and who is to blame, that can be about survival in the job or not. So that's when blame is more likely to happen, where people are less secure employment-wise?
Absolutely, yeah. And you see that a lot sometimes in the States too, because in a lot of the actual states in the USA, you're a lot more vulnerable because you can be fired on the spot. So the stakes are higher. The personal stakes are higher. And if blame comes up, then it's almost, you know, it's a security thing. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If your basic needs aren't met, if you could be fired, if you could lose your job because of this incident that's happened, it's far more in your interest to start shifting blame and attention away from what happened rather than be able to sit down and discuss things in a kind of calm, rational way, because okay, something might have gone wrong, but let's look at what we can do.
Are we wrong to say, and particularly let's say around Brexit and some of the positioning there for blame, there's a sense in which maybe everyone is partially to blame, but you don't want to admit that, so you blame somebody else. In a work environment, what if it is somebody else's fault? What if you are about to take the rap because someone in a different department or one of your colleagues continues to mess up?
And that brings it down to, again, what can you be accountable? Can you be accountable for your part in what's happened here? And it might be the case, and this can be really frustrating, that somebody, Susan, hasn't delivered on her accounts, so you can't actually finish your part of the job. And it looks like, since you were the last point of call, it looks like that you just didn't do your job. And that is frustrating. There's no doubt about that. But it is about working as a team, and it is about saying, right, well, this didn't happen, but what could I have done differently? Because ultimately, in order to deal with any kind of situation like that, all you can do is whatever is within your control. And if we can bring our attention back to what is in your control, how might you do this differently in the future? What could you have done that might have had a different outcome?
Now, in the political realm, in the latter part of the week regarding Brexit, it was less about the blame game, and it may end up being, if some kind of deal is done, about how do you sell something to others in an organisation or outside of the organisation, and you don't want it to look like you've done a massive U-turn, or you want to sell them something that isn't going to be very palatable to them. The language you use is important.
The language you use is important. There's kind of two ways of looking at that. I mean, if you can bring a concept or an ideology into the public domain that may previously have been thought of as bizarre or even bigoted, or, you know, a variety of different kind of unpalatable, ironically.
Hard to say, and hard to stomach.
That's it. That's exactly it. But the more you say it, the more you repeat that, the more you push it into the public domain, the less bizarre it suddenly becomes, because people become familiar with it. And then it becomes an actual potentially viable way of doing things. And then before you know it, you're in the situation that you once thought could never, ever happen. And so that's one way of doing it, is just simply repeating yourself.
One of the tricks, I suppose, that people use often is subterfuge. Mm. And the origin of the word subterfuge is Latin, and it means I flee secretly. So it's about trying to do a U-turn and nobody noticing.
That's it. That's it. And I think Tusk's tweet during the week as well about the Quo Vadis was interesting too, because it is like, where are you marching? Where are you going? And I thought, you know, there was so many different angles to what he was saying, and it was quite loaded, because that kind of dates back to biblical times when Peter was fleeing the crucifixion, or the people were trying to crucify him, and he met the risen Jesus on the way out and way out of town, and said, "Where are you going? Where are you marching, Quo Vadis?" And he was, "I'm going, returning to be crucified by the people." And, you know, I do think it's possibly getting at, well, you know, is Johnson going to be crucified by Brussels? Is he going to be crucified by his people in the long term?
A bit of Latin can come in handy every now and again. Organisational psychologist Louise Carroll, thank you very much for joining us on the programme. We'll take a break.
One.